Hi, this is the Social Jello with Angelo show. My name's Angelo. I'm a social scientist, surfer, martial artist, and a whole lot of other things. Coming to you live from Kasai City, Japan, the Social Jello with Angelo show.
What's up? And welcome to another episode of Social Jello with Angelo podcast. I'm here with Kaju Kembo historian. Is that right? That's the right title, Kaju Kembo historian?
Sure, KSK. Why not?
Okay. Let's start with a bang.
Don't call me late.
Just don't call you late for dinner. Mitch Powell, as you saw, the title is How Was Kaju Kembo Founded Really? Question mark. So I'm just gonna grab that, and without further ado, just in case I should mention this. If you like what you see, you like what you hear today, like and subscribe and share with your friends. If you're a Kaju Kembo guy, you want to share some history with other Kaju Kembo, your students, or maybe some friends of yours, more than likely to share. For those of you who are watching this as your first episode, you don't know what Kaju Kembo is, check out the What is Kaju Kembo podcast link right here, and it'll take you to another link with UFC coach and Kaju Kembo practitioner John Hackelman and Black Belt. If you don't know who that is, that's Chuck Liddell's coach. You can find out more on this episode here. Today, we're going to be covering some history. So, without further ado, Mitch, what you got?
Well, let's just say for your viewers, the purpose of this podcast is to clear up some misconceptions about the founding of Kaju Kembo and also about the five folks that were credited with founding the art. There's a lot of information out there about Kaju Kembo, but unfortunately, sadly, a lot of it's not very accurate. It's been romanticized over years, and it's kind of come into almost a fairy tale. So what I'm trying to do now is take the information that I have researched and provide a much better understanding of the founding of Kaju Kembo. You know, I started Kaju Kembo in 1975. So over the years, I've found a lot of information about the art. But in the last probably 10 years, I got really involved in the research aspect of it, investigating, you know, when it got started, who was there, what did they know, and so forth. And I just started creating a timeline. You know, over the last 10 years or so, I was able to fill in a lot of blanks, and it helped myself understand the art better. So that's what we're going to share today. Like, if you're new to Kaju Kembo, this will give you a really good understanding of how the art was put together. If you're a Kaju Kembo veteran, some of the information I'm going to share with you, it's going to be really interesting to you, but it's going to be different than what you've been told or read. So your first question, though, in really hearing anything that I'm saying should be, hey, how does this guy know these things? So, Angela, I'm going to start right there, and I'm going to share some of my sources for this information. In 1987, Vion McCarroll, he organized a sit-down interview with Adriano Imperato and Joseph Hulk. Vince Black was the interviewer. And in this recorded interview, the two Kaju Kembo co-founders, they talk a lot about how Kaju Kembo was created and what the different co-founders did to create this art. So there's a lot of information that comes from that. And as I cite this information later on, I'll be using that. So the 1987 interview. In 1992, Emil Bautista and Vince Black, they got together and they said, hey, let's interview these guys again. So they interview Imperato, Joseph Hulk, and now they've actually got Peter Chu. So now they've got three of the Kaju Kembo co-founders, and you know, they're sitting down and they're talking about how Kaju Kembo got together, how they came up with techniques and what arts they meshed together to create Kaju Kembo and so forth. So some of the information that I will draw from today will come from that interview. The Ordinez Kaju Kembo Ohana, the OKO, they share photographs and they also share some Kaju Kembo history from the perspective of Frank Ordinez, who was fourth Kaju Kembo co-founder. So besides that information, I've also shared stuff with Jason Groff, who inherited the OKO when Grandmaster Ordinez passed away. Jason Groff took this over, right? And so I've shared information with him regarding my research, regarding Ordonez's background, his ranks, and so forth. And I've been able to confirm a lot of the information that I've gotten. So we also have this book right here, Black Robe. And in this book here, Dave Tavares, he went on, he's an author, he went on and he interviewed George Chang's sister. And in doing so, he actually found out George Chang's true martial arts background. And it doesn't match up what's on the websites, what's written in the books. So we'll share that information as we move forward. From John Bishop's book, so that's this book right here. This to me, really, this is the Bible of Kaji Kembo. It's called Kaji Kembo, the original mixed martial art. And John wrote this book, I believe 2006. He interviewed Imperato numerous times. So he's got a lot of information directly from Imperato. And in many cases, he shares those interviews. You can actually go on different sites and find these interviews that John's done. And he's also obviously collected a lot of other information about the history of Kaji Kembo. One of the things I like about John's book is that when I find stuff, I can use his book to confirm it. So now instead of having a single source, we might have multiple sources saying, hey, that's this. It's a great book for that. There's a, so in that case there too, you're not just getting Imperial's perspective, but John's got information from Hulk, from Peter Chu, and from Frank Ordonez. So in this book right here, this is actually a thesis that was written by Bruce Haynes in 1962. And it's called Karate and Its Development in Hawaii through 1959. From that, we know when Adrian Imperato got his Shodan first degree black belt rank from William Chow. So more information about Imperato. From excerpts that we have from an unpublished book that Imperato was writing, it's basically his memoirs. We also have learned when Imperato truly started training from William Chow, and dates a little different than what other people use. So that's something that we want to share today. And it's part of the KSDI archives. So the KSDI is the Kaji Kembo Self-Defense Institute. It's headed by Adrian Imperato's nephew, Jim Kimo Imperato Smith, and Dr. Glenn Fraticelli. So they have a large collection of information related to the early development of Kaji Kembo. And I've been able to, as a historian with KSDI, I've been able to see some of this information. So we'll draw from that today. There's two articles that Peter Chu wrote for magazines, one for the Stars and Stripes Military Magazine and one for an East Bay magazine in the California area. It's defunct now, but the articles were written in 1953 and 1959. One of them talks about Chu's boxing history and got a lot of information for that because he wrote this article. And the other one talks about Chu's martial arts training in 1940s. That's really cool because you don't really see a lot of that. And it's written, but not that far after the training. We have records from the National Personnel Records Center. Those are military records. There's a photograph that the KSDI archives has. It's Frank Ordonez taking photographs of Peter Chu, and it's the summer of 1948. So we know what rank Peter Chu was in the summer of 1948 based on his photograph and a written note that goes along with it. And then we also have newspaper articles from newspapers.com for like 12 years of Peter Chu's boxing ring records. So from all this information, what I did was I put together a question in an answer format, and I will provide the answers to the most common questions about the founding of Kaji Kembo. And that will be our direction that we'll go to today. So any comments, any questions, anything you got going on before we go there? I can't hear you. I can hear you now.
Sorry, quick little technical difficulty there. I guess before, I don't want to go into the details of the promotion of Showdown through, because I know you're going to bring this up later when you start going through.
Right, yes.
But I do want to ask real quick, that thesis was on karate. And then Kempo came up and he got a rank in Kempo. Is that correct?
Yes.
You got a rank in Kempo. So why is it that, and maybe you're going to answer this later, and if you do, you can just tell me you're going to answer this later. Why is it that karate keeps coming up? I know Kafa karate and Kaju Kembo, but why does that keep coming up?
Your voice is fading out to nowhere.
Is that Japanese karate or what is that?
Well, the book itself, this thesis became a book that Haynes wrote. The thesis probably should have said martial arts and its development in Hawaii to 1959. But back then, everything that was martial arts related was karate. And everything that was grappling related was judo, even if it was just your traditional jiu-jitsu. So
all right.
I understand that because I know the history in Hawaii.
All right. So I'm just going to stop. That's all I wanted to clarify right now. So this comes up a lot. And it's not – because I did a whole podcast on that. If you want to check that out, I forgot which one it is. Did I do the whole podcast on this topic about karate? And yeah, that was the American karate versus Japanese karate podcast. Yeah. Check it out. That was a good one. We go over exactly why Americans call karate and what Japanese people call karate. Two different things. Check that out. I'm not going to go there. Shameless plug. Check that out. All right. So let's continue. Well, what else you got, Witch?
So we're going to do the Q&A now. So the most common question is, who were the five co-founders of Kaju Kembo? So there's Adriano Imperato, Joseph Hulk, Peter Chu, Frank Ordonez, and George Cheng. On a lot of websites, a lot of magazine articles, you're going to read the name Clarence Cheng. And I know with 100% certainty that his name is actually George Cheng. Now, they may have called him Clarence. It might have been a nickname. It might have been a mistake. Maybe someone called him Clarence and it was written down as Clarence. We're not sure why, but you might see Clarence Cheng on something. The reality is his name is George. So I just want to put that out there first. So then the next question is, how did the co-founders get together as a group? Well, if you go back to the 1987 video, you've got Hulk and Imperato, they're answering this. And they say, Frank Ordonez and Peter Chu brought everyone together, all five of them together. So Ordonez knew Imperato and he knew Hulk and he knew Chu. And then Chu knew Cheng. And when they got together, all five of them ended up getting together. So this is a really cool one here. It's what year did the co-founders first get together? So in that same video, Imperato's in a chair here, Hulk's in a chair here, and Vince Black asks him that question, and Imperato looks around the room and he goes, 47, 48. Hulk's looking kind of this way. He says, 48, 49. Then they look at each other and they go, 48? They kind of say it at the same time. And they're like, yeah. So they talk a little bit more. And then as they're kind of concluding this question, Hulk says, and I think part of 1947 too. And Imperato goes, yeah. Well, here's a really important point right here. When they sat down together, this is the first time they'd seen each other in almost 40 years. So this is not rehearsed. These guys are just chilling, talking, being interviewed, and they're answering these questions. So 1947 is the beginning of when they start training together. And they train in 48 and they train in 49. So that takes us to the next thing, which is, well, okay, so they train together. So when they got together, where did they first train? And it's really cool because Imperato answers this very well. He says, when we first got together, we trained a little bit in Damon Track. So whenever you hear Damon Track, what they're talking about is the housing development where Peter Chu lived. So he says, we trained there a little bit. He goes, and then we decided to test each other out. So we made a date and we went to Kaheke Gym and we tested each other out. So, you know, you got your karate versus judo and judo versus kempo and kempo versus boxing. And they're doing this. This is where they're at. And from there, they decide to go and train in this abandoned military barracks across the street from where Frank Ordonez lived in the Jalava Veterans Housing. So Imperato and Ordonez both lived in Jalava Veterans Housing. But there's this abandoned, Hope called it a Quonset hut. And it's across the street from where Frank Ordonez lives. And they go to this place and they start training there. So one of the things you'll read about Kaji Kimbo, kind of the mystery side of it is, did the Kaji Kimbo co-founders train secretly? Have you heard this, that they trained secretly?
Yeah, I heard that they closed the doors and it was something that no one saw, and they didn't want the public to know till some other time. I'm just talking about like the rumors I heard.
Okay, yeah, because I think that's pretty consistent throughout Kaji Kimbo. So this is really cool. So during this same interview, right? During this interview, Vince Black, he asked Joseph Volk, he said, hey, did your teacher, Professor Okazaki, know that you were training with these guys? At the same time, Imperato and Hope both look up at Vince Black and say, no one knew. Simultaneously, unrehearsed, Imperato answers, Hulk answers. They both look at him and say the same exact word. No one knew. So when they trained at Kaheke Gym, people would have seen them training together. But that didn't mean they were there making techniques up. When they trained in this Quonset hut, this military barracks, that would have been a time where they were making up techniques. So let's go to this, leads us right to this next question. Why did the co-founders decide to create techniques of their own? I mean, they all had martial arts training. They were all training in something and had techniques they had to learn and perfect for that particular art, right? So why did they come up with stuff of their own, right? Well, in the 1992 interview, Peter Chu says that when they got together, they didn't try to create techniques right away. That wasn't why they got together. He said that didn't come about until later on. He was at Kaheke Gym and he's in a class and the class is being taught by Sam Luke Sr. And Peter Chu's training with Sam Luke's son. And by the way he describes this, I believe Imperato's right there with him on the mat training. And Chu had like an epiphany. He said, I realized that the traditional martial artist couldn't defend against a trained boxer or a trained karate man. He said, that's when I turned to Imperato. He called him Sonny at the time. So I turned to Sonny and I said, hey, why don't we combine all our arts together to create techniques to defeat a trained fighter?
And, oh, sorry to stop you. Who said that?
Peter Chu.
Oh, okay.
So,
wait. And Peter Chu's the boxer.
So Peter Chu, basically, his hands are too fast for the traditional Danzaru Jiu-Jitsu guy that he's training with. So he's realizing this, and he
says, Wait a second. Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to do this to you a lot. you can hear me okay, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So my question, you said judo, kempo, karate. When these guys got together, they were testing out their judo, kempo, karate. Real quick.
And boxing.
What judo are we talking about here?
Well, it would have been Danzanru judo for Joe Hulk at that time, and it would have been Kodokan judo for Adriano Imperato. We're going to break down which each one of them would have been trained in at that time, but Imperato was actually a judo man, and okay. Hulk was a jiu-jitsu man. But the Danzanru jiu-jitsu has judo in it.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And this is for the more serious plugs. I have another episode here, Dante Ryu Jiu-Jitsu. If you know what that is, well,
there you go.
Whole hour has been dedicated to that by that, and you can check that out there. All right.
So from this, we know that they didn't get together right away to make these techniques up. They trained together for a while. They're training art versus art. And at one point, Peter Chu says, hey, man, we should combine our arts. But I think there's a key component here. He says we should combine our arts so that we could come up with techniques to beat a trained fighter. Not another judo guy or another boxer, a trained fighter, somebody that actually has, whether it's ring training skills or street fighting skills, but someone that's not just your traditional martial artist.
And mind you, for my listeners and the people who watch the show, we're talking about 1940 something. So kickboxing.
47.
So kickboxing does not exist. When they're talking, they're talking about a ring fighter, they're talking about a boxer, perhaps, maybe, very, very rarely in history, maybe a catch wrestler. Maybe. And that's a huge maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Good point. A Danzen Ryu Jiu-Jitsu guy, because, you know, Professor Okazaki taught so many people in Hawaii, and there would have been a lot of Danzen Jiu-Jitsu practitioners back then. Boxers versus grapplers, pretty common in Hawaii in the 1940s and even earlier. So, you know, we know they started training and creating techniques because Peter Chu told us so. And then we need to know, like, how many techniques did they create? So from John Bishop's book, when he's interviewing Imperato, Imperato told him, he said, look, we created grab defenses, punch defenses, and self-defense combinations against knife and a club. So we know, if you're a Kachikun practitioner, almost all of them, especially the original Kempo line, they do grab arts, punch arts, knife, and club. So that goes all the way back to the beginning. What we don't know is how many techniques they created. And we also don't know if they stayed in their original format or if they were modified over the years. But I want to add this part here. So in the 87 video, it was also a seminar. And Vince Black and others, they were training, right? They're doing martial arts, Kajikimbo techniques. And Joe Hulk is sitting in there and Imperato sitting in there watching all these guys, right? So in the interview, Vince Black asked Hulk if any of the techniques he saw them do look familiar, right? And Joe Hulk's response is beautiful. He's smiling. He goes, they all looked familiar. And he's very animated. He's doing this. He says, all the techniques you were doing, we used to do that. So I don't know what techniques we were using that day. Probably grab arts and punch arts, because those are the most common techniques that you would do at a seminar. But Joe Oak looks at these techniques and says, yeah, guy, that's what I used to do. So we know he wasn't unfamiliar with them. He didn't look at them like they were from, you know, another world. He's like, yeah, I used to do those. So I think that's an important part of it. Now, we have to know what locations these guys trained at. I think that's important, especially if you're doing any kind of history. So they already told us they trained at Kaheka Gym. Now, Kaheka Gym was at 904 Kaiheka Lane. And it was an Okazaki Danzen Ryu Jiu-Jitsu school that was used by other people, not just the Jiu-Jitsu guys. William Chow taught there. In fact, Imperato trained from William Chow there. Imperato taught there. Woodrow McCandless taught there. These are all Kempo guys. So that was a very popular mat. A lot of folks trained at that gym. And Okazaki had multiple students teaching there. The Kajikimbo co-founders trained at Peter Chu's house. And I think some of the photographs that we have from the archives are from Chu's home. And that was located at 574 P Road in Damon Track. And then the abandoned military barracks across from Ordonez's residence in Alava Housing. So one thing that's really cool from the 87 video is they were talking about this Quonset hut and training in this barrack. And Hope made it clear that they trained in multiple empty barracks around there. But that particular one, he said, we trained there for a couple of years. So when Hulk speaks, not that I discredit any of the other ones, but I really value when Hulk speaks. I mean, the guy is a retired Fulbright colonel. He's had a very decorated life. And when he shares this information from you, it's usually really detailed. In this case, he's telling you, hey, look, guys, we were there for a couple years in this abandoned building. So now we're at the at that part where you go, okay, these guys all train together. We get that. We know where they train. What did they know? So we're going to look at the martial arts styles that the co-founders had. And keep in mind, Kaju Kimbo is K-A for Karate, J-U for Judo, Jiu-Jitsu, K-N for Kempo, B-O for boxing. It's Chinese and Western style boxing, right? But if you go onto the websites, what you're going to find out is the Kaju Kimbo co-founders are considered from day one, 1947, when they first got together, to be martial arts masters. And then there's another phase to that where, for some reason, they're all assigned a specific art. And they are considered to be a master of that art. As an example, Peter Chu is supposed to be a master of karate, specifically Tang Shido. And Frank Ordonez is supposed to be a master of Sekeno Jiu-Jitsu. Joe Hulk is supposed to be a master of Judo. And Parado is a master of Kempo. And George Chang is a master of Chinese boxing, Kung Fu. Right. That's what's written. That's what's known. So I want to share the background of the five co-founders as far as their martial arts background up to 1949, at least from what we know. Nothing beyond that, because 49 is when the group stopped training together. So let's look at Adriano Imperato. And we get this from John Bishop's book. So the source of the information was Adriano Imperato. He was taught boxing at a very young age by his father and his uncle. At 11 years old, he's now moved to Kauai, and he's living with his half-brother, Hilario, Larry. And he said he learned the 12 basic strikes of Eskrima from a gentleman named Professor Alex. It doesn't say he was an Eskrima master. It says he learned the 12 basic strikes. 13 years old, Imperato moves back to Honolulu, and he briefly trains in jiu-jitsu, but at the same time, he gets his renewed interest in boxing. So he joins the local boxing clubs, and he starts boxing competitively. He's 17 years old. He goes down to the Plum Settlement, and he starts taking judo lessons from Sensei Taneo. Now, Imperato's not paying for the judo lessons. He's trading. Very smart man. He says, hey, I will teach your son, George, how to box, and you teach me judo. And Tanea agreed.
Wait, he's 17.
Yeah, he's 17 years old. Now he's teaching boxing.
So he's a smart kid.
Very smart
kid. Yeah. Smart kid. I love to emphasize their ages here, because we all look at this. I've seen much older gentlemen look at this, story, and forget how old they are. And I think that's very relevant to people and how they talk and communicate to each other now. When I see intergenerational martial arts instructors and practitioners and students, and I'm like, I'm trying to be very unpolitical about this next statement, if you can't tell.
Yes.
I think it's really important to realize that baked into our system is this weird thing where this kid at 17 is training judo lessons for boxing, right? I think this is really important relevant to how I see people communicating now, because it's kind of baked into our art. This thing about young people and older people kind of working together. I'm not going to say equals, but from the story, what you just mentioned sounds pretty equal. Sounds kind of cocky nowadays, actually. If a 17-year-old kid walked up to a judo instructor and said, hey, I want free judo lessons and I'll teach you some boxing. But I digress. Continue with your story.
I'm trying to sidetrack a little bit, too. I do believe Imperato was teaching Sensei Taneo Boxing as well as Taneo's son. But I kind of don't want to go down that road. So yes, he's obviously knows what he's doing with his hands, right? So I believe John Bishop said the Imperator did this for like a year or a year and a half, right? And I think that's important because we're going to get to that in a second. But that takes us to Imperato is now drafted, and he's in the United States military. December 22nd, 1945, he's 19 years old, drafted. He's in the Army. He leaves Hawaii. And he comes back to Hawaii in a couple of sources. I have it from his memoirs, and we also know from John Bishop's book. He comes back to Hawaii. I actually know when he came back, or at least I believe I do. He was discharged on March 17th, 1947. So in John Bishop's book, Imperato said that, you know, he was 20 years old and he came back to Hawaii after the military. And his, it turns out to be his future brother-in-law, Walter Wood, tells him about Freddie Lara, George McCumber. They're learning some Kempo or learning martial arts from William Chow. And that's how Imperato finds out about William Chow. Well, in his memoirs, he breaks it down very detailed. Same account, same information. And what he says is he ends up going to Kaheka Gym, watching Chow teach a class, likes what he sees, and tells Chow, I want to become a student. And so Chow says, okay, you can start training with me. At that time, Imperato is joining a group of white belts. All of the students are white belts. And Imperato says, he writes right in there, this was 1947. So when he starts training from Chow, he starts after he gets discharged and comes back to Hawaii. He's living in Halawa, and he starts making this bus trek over to the Kaheka Gym. And he actually writes down how him and Freddie Lara got on this bus and got off of that bus and got on this bus to get to Kaheka Lane. It's a very interesting story. So we know that information. Now, from there, he's training from Chow, but from there, on October 31st, 1947, Imperato's back in the Army, and he's on a ship heading out to Guadalcanal. He's part of the mop-up crew handling, you know, the war is now over, but you got to go and go to the islands and make sure everybody's surrendered and, you know, people are safe and there's food and the water's not contaminated and so forth. He's part of that crew. So he's gone for the remainder of the year. So that's Imperato's training up until the point where he starts training with the Kaji Kembo co-founders. So now we're going to go to Joseph Hulk. And Hulk, in the 92 interview, he said that he learned some boxing when he was a kid, and he used to box with his older brother, but he didn't like getting hit in the face. So he gravitated towards grappling. In the 87 interview, Hulk said he started training for Okazaki in 1938, learning Donzanru, right? Well, in 1944, Hulk enlisted in the military. He's in the Army, and he's gone. He goes to basic training, and they realize that, hey, this guy's got some pretty good skills. So they identify him, and they make him a hand-to-hand combat instructor. That takes him over to Europe. He's over there for about a year. Army 9th Infantry, and he comes back to Hawaii in 1947. Now, the next group of things about Hulk, I got from an interview I did with Joe Hulk's son, Barry. I interviewed him in 2021, I believe it was, March of 2021. So his dad came back, 47. And he started his Donzanru Jiu-Jitsu training again, this time with Bing Fai Lao and Sid Kufaroff. So he's doing his training, and on July 14th, 1948, he was promoted to Shodan, Black Belt First Degree, by Okazaki and Sid Kufaroff. So for people trying to figure out when did Joseph Hulk get his Black Belt, he got it in July of 1948. Okay. He also, after this black belt, officially began training in judo. So I think that's important to know that Hulk didn't train in formal judo, so Kodokan judo, until after July of 1948. And he started training with Professor Inoue, who was really kind of famous there in Hawaii. So that takes Peter Chu. So Peter Chu, he started boxing as a young kid. At age 11, he won the Joe Lynch Boxing Award. His first amateur ring fight was in 1940. And all this information comes from an article he wrote in the Stars and Stripes Military Magazine. So in 1943, Chu began judo training. He doesn't say with who, but I would say must have been must have been Okazaki, because that's who was teaching at that particular time. That would be my guess. And he says, and a couple of years later, started training in karate under Matose. So that's also from a newspaper article. Now, Chu's first adult ring fight, I know that. It was February 11th, 1944, and he fought as a featherweight against Terry Pagano. Chu was a member of the Ledesma AC Boxing Club. All this information is available through Ancestry.com and newspapers.com. You can find a lot of stuff about Peter Chu. From that point on, Chu was frequently competitor on the Hawaii boxing circuit, amateur boxing circuit. I mean, that guy fought numerous fights. Every couple of weeks, Chu had a boxing match.
So I just have a quick question about that right there.
Yeah.
Peter Chu, the first award that you were mentioning, he wrote his own article, but you're also saying you can find stuff on news. So is there a public record for Peter Chu's boxing record?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah, well, Peter Chu is the easiest person to research because he was in a newspaper for 2 weeks. He fought over and over. And it'll say, you know, he's got this many fights as an amateur, or when he started, how long he's fought. I know his first fight, and I know his last fight. I have all this stuff in between. 1944, 18 years old, Chu enlisted in the United States Army. So in 1946, because he's in the Army, he gets stationed at Fort Shafter. That's where he meets Frank Ordonez. And at that time, Ordonez said, hey, man, come and train with me and Joseph Hulk. We're learning Donsu Jiu-Jitsu from Sam Luke. So Chu does that. And then Frank Ordonez says, hey, come over here and learn Kempo with me. I'm training from Thomas Young, so the Matose line. I'm doing Kempo too. Chu does that, right? So we know Chu's background. That information is pretty detailed. Now, Imperato said Chu had learned some Korean karate. He said it was Tong Shido. And Bishop kind of explains how Imperato believed this. Chu's father was Korean. And he said, hey, my dad taught me karate. So Imperato felt, well, if your dad was Korean, he must taught you Korean karate. And the only Korean karate that Imperato knew at the time was Tong Shido. So that's why he thought it was Tong Shido, right? So there's a question of, did he know any Tong Shido? In the 1987 video, Hulk was talking about the styles that they combined together. And he said, from Peter Chu, he said he taught boxing, Tong Shido, and whatever else he was into, quotes. So there's some Tong Shido there, but we're not quite sure about that. And I'm going to break that down a little bit later. So Frank Ordonez, very similar, age 11, starts learning Donzaru Jiu-Jitsu. That's where he meets Joseph Hulk. Age 18, Ordonez goes in the United States Army. He's in the Army, he's stationed at Fort Shafter. He meets Peter Chu, and we know they train together in Donzaru and they train together in Kempo. So they have kind of similar backgrounds, boxing, Donzaru Jiu-Jitsu, and Matose Kempo. George Chang. Now, according to author Dave Tavares, Chang actually trained in Hakka Kung Fu. There's a lot of stories about him going to China with his father, learning Silam Kung Fu and so forth. When Tavares interviewed George Chang's sister, she said none of that actually happened. So we're not sure where that came from. We're not sure who started writing that or why. But she said that at age 16, her brother, George Chang, began training from Wong Ku Fat. I've done a lot of research about Wong Ku Fat. I actually have photographs of his home. So he taught from his house. It was at 1015 Pula Lane, P-U-L-A-A Lane. And he had the house, and he had the house next door to it. And Wong was pretty pretty prominent martial arts instructor over there. He had his own lion dance team, but also taught a lot of martial arts throughout the community. There are articles calling him Professor Wong with his full name. And I remember reading something about a birthday. I don't know, it was like 60th, 65th birthday. There was a party for him, and there were thousands of people there. The governor was there. The former governor was there. The mayor. So this guy's a pretty prominent man. And that's who George Chang trained from.
And that was what style? Kung Fu?
It's called Hakka Kung Fu. Okay. So it's a hybrid mixed style.
Okay.
Chang was a basketball player in high school. He got a letter, played basketball at Farrington High School. In 1945, gets out of high school. The next year, 1946, he goes in the United States Army. He followed his brother. His brother was already a sergeant in the Army, I think 972nd Signal Corps, which I believe at one point Peter Chu and even Frank Warren were part of that. That may have been how they met George Chang. So Chang goes in the military, and he is stationed at Fort Shafter. So that's probably how all of those guys got together. So we know the backgrounds of these guys, right? And it's a little bit different than what you'll read on the websites. I mean, none of them are masters of anything, right? At least not in 1947. So
let me just review what you've already told me so far, if anybody's keeping up and listening to details. Yeah. So far, the only people I can see with black belts that you mentioned, Joseph Hulk got his black belt in 1948. So far, if I'm following your story correctly, I don't see any other black belts here. Is that right? Well,
yeah, you'll see one more, and I'll go down to the ranks. I've got, I'm going to break this part down on what they would have contributed. We'll talk about how they got the name, and then we'll go to ranks.
Okay.
Okay. So if we look at this, Imperato, his primary art at that time that the co-founders got together in 1947, it would have been boxing, not Kenpo. He probably had about 4 years or so of boxing. So he's a ring fighter, right? The next thing Imperato would have known based on the information that we have would have been judo, about a year, maybe a year and a half of formal judo. Then maybe 6 months, you figure April, May, June, July, August, September, maybe October. But by October, he's on a ship and he's gone. So he's got about 6 months of Kenpo training. He's got a very short stint learning some jiu-jitsu. And then he has the knowledge of the 12 strikes, the basic strikes of Eskrima. That's what Imperato knows in 1947. Joe Hulk, he knows Danzaru Jiu-Jitsu. That's all he knows in 1947. There's no other arts. There's no judo. There's no formal judo. That comes in 48. Peter Chu, Western boxing. At the time these guys got together, he probably had about 100 ring fights. He'd been fighting a lot, quite a few years. And I have a lot of those fights documented where I can kind of estimate about 100 ring fights. He does a little bit of jiu-jitsu, and he does a little bit of Kenpo. Frank Warden's cross trains, very similar to Western boxing, jiu-jitsu, and Kenpo. And George Chang, Hakka Kung Fu, Chinese boxing. So those are the arts that would have been meshed together. Chu, again, could have had some Korean karate training. I'll talk about that when we get to that segment. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. So the next thing is, how did they get their name? How did the name Kaju Kenpo come about? So in the 1992 interview, Peter Chu does a great job of explaining this. He said, we took K-A for karate, J-U for judo, jiu-jitsu, K-E-N for Kenpo, B-O for boxing, Western, and Chinese boxing. And we wrote them down on paper and we cut it up and we put it on the table. So Chu's moving the letters around and he's coming up with names and he's explaining this. And the Imperato and Hulk are laughing because he's saying, oh, we came up with Ju Ka Kenbo and all these funny names, right? And they're all laughing about it. And then he said he moved the letters around and he points at the board and he looks at Joe, so Joseph Hulk, and he says, hey, Joe, that's it. Kaju Kenpo. And he slaps his hand. He goes, first Kaju Kenpo, Damon Track, 1947. So did they come up with Kaju Kenpo name in 1947? Peter Chu says they did. And Imperato and Hulk are there with him, and they don't contest any of this at all. Problem is, in 1987, in the interview, Imperato was talking about Kaju Kimbo and how this came about. And at the time, Joe Hulk says, "Hey, I'll take credit for that. I'm the one that came up with the name Kaju Kimbo." And Imperato said, "That's right, it was you." So there's even more to this. On the OKO website, Frank Warnes mentioned that he had a role in coming up with this name. He didn't say he came up with it. He just said he had a role in coming up with it, was never credited with it. So it either came up with Peter Chu, or it came up with, it came from Joe Hope, or it came partially from Frank Warnes. And I don't know if it's all that important, but what is important to point out is the name Kaju Kimbo came up while these guys were training together during the founding period of Kaju Kimbo. Now, we happen to know it was not used formally until 1957 when we found the school records from the Waihua School. We know it was used in September of 1957. The big mystery is, why did it, you know, why did it take all these years for the name to be used? I'll never know. So that's how they came up with the name. And then this is another piece of the kind of the mystery puzzle. How did we end up with five martial arts masters? So what ranks were the Kaju Kimbo co-founders? March 3rd, 2021, I interviewed Barry Hulk, Joseph Hulk's son, and I learned that the co-founders began training together in 1947, and his father, Joe Hulk, was a brown belt. He said he was the only one in the group that had any martial arts rank. And on July 14, 1948, Henry Okazaki, Sid Kufra promoted Hulk to the rank of Shodan, black belt first degree, making Hulk the first black belt in the group. In 1949, Hulk received his rank of Nidan, second degree black belt, and he also received his certificate of mastery and his instructor scrolls. So by 1949, Joseph Hulk was a martial arts master, documented.
And we're talking Danzan Ryu Jiu-Jitsu.
Danzan Ryu Jiu-Jitsu, documented. Okay. So in 1949, Imperato became Chow's first student to be promoted to the rank of Shodan, black belt first degree. That's from Bruce Haynes. And it's also in Imperato's
memoir. Wait a second. 1949,
Imperato is promoted to Shodan. Okay, so now you've got two Kaju Kimbo black belts, Hulk and now Imperato. And we know that from Bruce Haynes' thesis, also his book, but we also know it from Imperato's memoirs because I read it in there. So what Imperato said was he started training in 1947 from Chow, and he's training in all the group classes. But in 1948, he started training in private lessons with Chow. And they trained multiple hours every single day. And he said, "I did this for a year and I was promoted to black belt."
Wait.
So he trained. Wait. Go ahead.
He was promoted to black belt by who again?
By Chow, William Chow.
By William Chow. Okay. That's where I was losing you for a second there. So Imperato got promoted to a black belt in Kempo.
William Chow was a Kempo instructor, Kempo Jiu-Jitsu, in
1949. Yes. Okay, that's what I'm trying to check here. So far, if I'm reading you, if I'm following you correctly, at this point in the 40s, late 40s, here, I'll say my. Can you hear me?
Siri
turned on for some stupid reason. So, in the late 1940s, Joe Hulk has a black belt in Danzan Ryu Jiu-Jitsu. And Imperato now has a black belt in Kempo under William Chow. Okay.
Yes.
So, and who does William, and if you can answer this, I don't want to go down because I don't want to take up too much of, we're getting close to our hour and I want to try to finish it within an hour. Who's William Chow, and does he have a legitimate rank under someone, or is he self-promoting himself?
William Chow got promoted to black belt in 1946 under James Mitose.
Okay. And Dave Mitose, who's Mitose? Mitose Where's his lineage coming from? Is that like under a legitimate?
Mitosi's lineage, according to Mitosi, came from his family back in Japan.
So Mitosi, according to Mitosi, got a black belt from his family.
You could do 100 hours on the Mitosi art with one half of the group saying this guy's a fraud and the other half of the group saying this guy's an honorable great grandmaster. Thank God for him.
Okay. It's a ping pong. Okay. So Mitosi is a mystery, a man of mystery. William Chow, not so much. He's a black belt under a man of mystery. And then we have Imperato, who got his black belt. Who trained with William Chow for how long before he got his black belt?
Well, he trained in group classes in 47, 1948, 1949. But he also trained privately from 48 to 49 for a whole year, private lessons daily.
But still,
he wrote in his manuscript.
I just want to get this out of the way for any of the people that have arguments about how many years and legitimacy and stuff. So if I'm hearing you correctly, Imperato trained for 3 years.
Yes.
So he trained for 3 years. He trained for 3 years under William Chow and got his black belt in Kenpo in 3 years. Just making that very clear, if I understand you correctly.
Right. I think it helps if you know that the guy was a pretty prominent street fighter who's learning martial arts. So.
Yeah, no, I understand. I get it.
4 years of boxing and maybe a year and a half of judo, right? He's not your normal guy. I don't know what I'm doing. Let me walk into your school.
I get it. But still, I'm just making a point. I'm making a semi point here. They're taking into consideration that he has a lot of experience outside of what he's learning in those 3 years that he's learning with. William Chow is taking into consideration that he has a lot of experience outside of what he's taught him and previous experience and the other things he did. That's all I'm trying to say. And he got it in 3 years.
Sure. Okay. And you factor in war veteran, right? He's doing the mop up in the war. I mean, his background, it leads to martial arts. It leads to fighting. It leads to taking some guy down.
Right? Yeah, I'm not questioning his background. I'm just clearing things up. That's all.
It sounds like you're stuck on the 3 year thing. It could be 3 years. This guy's a badass.
No, he is.
You got to get time out of your head. I realized for 50 years they couldn't fight their way out of a paper bag. Yeah, so people got to get time out of their head, man.
You're touching on some great points.
I know, because I know how you teach. I'm trying to get you to say it. That doesn't matter.
Yeah. You had some great points here. I'm just going to say, yeah. And yeah, okay. So, continue.
We have a little side thing going on here, man. But anyways, so you've got Chu, Ordonez, and Chang, and there's no records or photographs of these guys having any martial arts rank in 47, 48, etc., right? There is a photograph of Peter Chu taken in the summer of 1948. Chu's dressed in a full white uniform and he's wearing a white belt. So we can tell you that in the summer of 1948, Peter Chu's still white belt. And I think that's important because although Chu didn't have any rank, he had 100 ring fights in 47. So this guy clearly knew what he was doing with his hands. He had a 12-year amateur boxing career. This guy was a pretty tough dude. So this takes us to the next thing. When did the co-founders create the Black Belt Society? But the Black Belt Society is a big part of the Kajikimbo history, right? So in the 87 founders interview, Imperato talks about the Black Belt Society. He said when the co-founders first got together in 1947, he says that's the beginning of the Black Belt Society. But then he goes on to say, but it wasn't formed yet. And I think we know why it wasn't formed. They weren't black belts. Your mic's off again. Your mic's off.
No, yeah, I purposely left it off so I wouldn't interrupt you. But yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. They weren't black belts.
They weren't black belts. So it wasn't formed yet. So I'm going to say most likely it was formed in 1949 when Imperato got his black belt. I mean, that would make the most sense. I just don't see Imperato self-promoting. Hulk's formally promoted to black belt. I think Imperato gets formally promoted to black belt. And then the two of them together create the Black Belt Society. And then Chu, Ordonez, and Chang are then promoted up through the Black Belt Society. And I believe Imperato gives us a clue to this in the 1987 video. He says, he says that Chu's mother sewed their uniforms and sewed their black belts for the Black Belt Society. So there has to be a reason for, you know, Ordonez. So it was Ordonez's mother who sews the uniforms up for them and sews the black belts for them. So there has to be a reason for Ordonez's mom to sew these black belts for them. And I'm thinking, look, we're all black belts now. We're the Black Belt Society. And I believe this happens because they have these techniques of their own. And they're clearly different than the Kempo that Imperato's learning from Chao. They're clearly different than the Danzaru that Hulk is learning. In the 87 video, Hulk said he even trained from Chao for a little while because he knew the Danzaru he was learning wasn't enough. He needed more. So
let me just clear this timeline up. So now you're saying in the late 40s, according to the interviews, now Joe Hulk, Frank Ordonez, and Imperato have black belts now in the late 40s.
I believe so. No, I believe that
it's implied. It's implied because he said that Ordonez's mother was the one sewing their black belts, all the uniforms,
all five of them,
over all five of them. So
all five of them.
So now, what you're saying is, at this point, we know for sure three of them got their ranks, right? We know for sure that Frank got it.
We only know two.
So now we're implying. We have some questions and maybe they won't be answered because there's no public record of this, but we're implying that now for sure, officially, according to public record, Imperato has his black belt, Hulk has his black belt, and now Frank, George, who's the last guy I'm missing here?
George Chang and Peter Chu.
Peter Chu. Those are the last three. So Frank, Peter Chu, and Frank, Peter Chu, and George, now these three guys, are now black belts. We're not really sure how, right?
I believe the Black Belt Society promoted them.
So we're implying, because at this point, the Black Belt Society is Imperato and Joe Hulk. So we're kind of implying that Joe Hulk and Imperato promoted these three to black belt.
I believe it. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So that's the implication.
And for this reason, Imperato always
And they promoted them to black belt under their new organization called the Black Belt Society. They didn't give them black belts in Danzanryu Jiu-Jitsu.
No, they
didn't give them black belts in Kempo.
Kajikembo.
Exactly. They just created this Black Belt Society, and they're already talking about Kajikembo. So they gave them a black belt, technically the first black belts in Kajikembo.
They are the first Kajikembo black belts, okay. All five of them.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, that is my belief. And I think with Imperato saying, look, Ordonez's mother, she created these belts for us. She sewed them all up, calls them black belts, didn't say belts, says black belts. And Imperato's always said that the Black Belt Society, they were all black belts, all of them. Well, this would explain how they could all become black belts.
Yeah, and it makes sense. If you look at the ranks, like you just said, at this point, the highest ranking black belt is kind of Joe at this point. He's got a second degree black belt, right? So he kind of has, and then technically Shodan means first degree black belt. So technically Imperato kind of has the authorization to have a regular black belt, a non-striped black belt under him, right? Mm-hmm. So they both kind of have the authority to promote people to black belts in this self-governed authority. in this new society that they've created on their own. How old are these guys? I love saying this part.
21, 22.
Sorry. So they're... Why yeah. So you want to know why I'm laughing? Look, I'm not laughing at the founders of Kaja Kimbo, because some of you are like, ooh, Angelo is disrespecting the sacred scripts, the sacred texts. He's desecrating the sacred texts. He's laughing at the founders. I am not laughing at the founders, okay? I'm laughing at the idea that a 21-year-old, a 22-year-old have just founded their own black belt society with second degree, first degree black belts. And I want some of you to think about this for a second. We all respect these guys in this conversation we've had for the last hour. Maybe some of you have never heard of it. Maybe you don't. You know, I can't speak for you. But let me just go back to this. For people who argue about ranks and age and seniority, and in Japan, they have the Kohai Senpai system. It's a hierarchical system that not only exists in martial arts, but exists in business as well. A 21-year-old and a 22-year-old, first degree, second degree, have just created their own system and have now promoted three other guys. We all agree we're badasses, but if I have to look at this from the outside or looking in, how old are those guys? Wait, so 21, 22, and how old are the other three?
They're all the same age. I think Chang was the oldest one by 6 months, 22.
So they all just barely hit drinking age. they can all now legally drink now, right now. They just barely got that out of the way. And they created their own black belt society a year after this. So they're all 20-year-olds, 21, 22-year-olds, and just created their own black belt society in their training. Why am I saying this? Like, if you think about how people argue now about rank and age and time served and all that stuff, I'm not saying, if you believe that, that's great. But I'm just going to kind of remind you, this is how this all started. Like, some people act like I have a bad attitude or a disrespectful attitude towards wherever. Like, just this is the style. But I look at why I have this attitude, and you say that the style I practice is banked in. A 21, 22-year-old creates his own society, mixing people from other schools. Don't even get me started about what happens if you mix people from other schools in Japan. Don't even get me started about the political drama that would happen if you grabbed people from other schools and promoted them in Japan. Don't even get me started with that. Don't even get me started about the kind of political drama that would happen in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu if someone did that as well. If someone under third degree black belt suddenly started their own academy. Don't get me started about the political drama that would happen from there. But I just find that point interesting. All right. We got to wrap up soon.
Yeah.
What you got in your notes?
Let's talk about Tong Sudo. Did Chu contribute Tong Sudo to the development of Kaja Kimbo? So we hear it mentioned. I mean, even Joe Hoke says Chu knew some Tong Sudo. So it would be really easy to say, hey, you know, he learned it from his father. Well, I have his father's draft cards. I have his father's 1940 census, 1950 census, and his obituary. And Peter Chu's father, who was also named Peter Chu Sr., he was born in Kauai in 1906. So he was born in Hawaii. So he wasn't born in Korea, raised around Korean martial artists in Korea. So if someone did teach his father some Korean martial arts, it would have happened in Hawaii. Probably a relative, maybe an uncle, a cousin, or whatever. That would be my guess. Someone in the neighborhood, if they're all familiar with the Korean arts, maybe someone from there. So someone would have had to teach his father martial arts. I want to point that out. And then the other thing is, the actual name Tong Sudo, from the stuff that I have, it was first used in Korea in 1944 by a man named Lee Wong Kuk, K-U-K. And then in 1945 by a more popular, well-known man named Hwang Ki. I happen to know that lineage because Hwang Ki taught Mariano Estioko, and Mariano Estioko taught Calvin Shin, and Calvin Shin taught me. So that's how I learned Tong Sudo from that line. Familiar with that. But he didn't start even using the name till 45. So if Chu would have learned Korean karate from his father, it wouldn't have been called Tong Sudo, because Tong Sudo, you know, it didn't even get a name until 44, right? Chu would have been learning it, you know, in the 30s. I think that's important to point out. Not quite sure how the Tong Sudo connection is, but I know we can say this much. In the summer of 1948, Peter Chu is a white belt. So if he did know Tong Sudo when they first got together in 47, for sure, and all the way up to the middle of 48, he didn't have any rank. So he would have known only the basics. I point that part out. So
that would mean that there's actually not that much karate in the beginning of the founding of this, outside of Kenpo. And then I can do a whole, and I don't want to go into this because I want to wrap it up. And I should probably do an entire, after talking to you, there's a few topics I want to hit up. Gatekeeping in martial arts. And also, I want to hit up the idea of what is the connection between Kenpo and karate is really what I want to have. Because someone was asking like about the Ed Parker guys. Some other person, I forgot where, one of my viewers is asking, they want me to do an episode about Kenpo karate, and specifically the Ed Parker system, how that all started, because I know that has to do with Tosin. I don't have time for that today, and I know you don't, and I know you don't either. So like, we're not going there today. But these are the kind of questions I'm asking myself now. But please continue.
Yeah. So I just one last thing. When did the co-founders stop training together? I mean, we've talked about all of this stuff, right? Who what they knew, what they did, where they trained, what they come up with, the ranks and so forth. Well, why did they stop? So in the 87 interview, Joe Hulk said that they stopped training together because he left for infantry training at Fort Benning, Georgia. So I don't know the exact date that he left, but sometime in 1949 is what he said. And Peter Chu was involved in the military. Chu actually went on and, you know, served a whole career in the military. And the interesting thing with Peter Chu, I mean, I know we're talking about these guys being 20, 21, 22 years old. These weren't your normal 22-year-old guys. A bomb dropped on them when they're in high school and killed all these people right around them. They go into the military. They have martial arts training, every one of them. They box. They can do grappling and so forth. And they serve in the army, and they come back and they go, hey, let's train together. Hulk started in 38. By the time these guys get together, he trained for a decade. He's a hand-to-hand combat instructor for the Army's 9th Infantry. So George Chang also leaves because he's doing military duty. In fact, for many, many years, they thought George Chang had been killed in Korea. He went to Korea during the war, but he was not killed. But the co-founders, even all the way up into the 87 video, believed that Chang had gotten killed overseas. So that's what causes them to stop training together. It's the Korean War, and they're off doing military duty, and Imperato's kind of left behind. And at some point, he brings his group together, starts training his own people, 49 or so, and then starts teaching at Paloma Settlement. His brother Joe joins him, becomes black belt, 1952. And Woodrow McCandless merges his school in with Imperato's school, and they all start teaching for Imperato. And then Imperato leads them all the way to the point where they create the name Kajikembo for their art, or use the name Kajikembo. And then all the first wave of Kajikembo instructors are taught, and a lot of them leave for the mainland, and Kajikembo now, you know, everywhere.
All right. And if you want more for this story, I will put a link here about the last at the what is Imperato Kajikembo. There's a whole other history lesson that will continue. So if you're watching this and you want to know more, let's say you didn't see the other one I just mentioned and you just saw this one. We kind of already covered the second half of the history he's talking about in this episode right here. So check that out. All right. Anything you missed? Any outstanding notes you didn't get to say?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, I just want to point out that there's a lot of history out there about Kajikembo, but when you're reading it and you see that they were believed to be five masters in 1947. And you say, well, each one was a master of this art or that art. You know, based on the research, that's not what happened here. These guys were training. They were learning different martial arts. Some were better at one art than the other. Hulk was clearly a grappler. That was his thing. He was the takedown guy. But they all had a lot of boxing. Imperato boxed. Chu boxed. Ordonez boxed. You know, Chang would have done Chinese boxing, right? So kind of a version of boxing. They all had decent hands, I guess is what I'm saying. So were they all these masters? No, but over time, while they're training together, they're still training from their instructors, and they're getting better at what they're doing. Imperato, he makes his way up, and he becomes a master of Kenpo. And Hulk works his way up, becomes a master of Danzuru Jiu-Jitsu, and then layers on top of that, learning Judo, right? So they never quit training. Were they, you know, romanticized too much to the point where they require us to do this research? Because we know now that's not necessarily the case, but it doesn't take away from what they did. They created an amazing base of a martial art. Imperato took it and ran with it and grew it and added some forms and additional techniques and stuff. And now there's even branches of Kaji Kembo. So, you know, they've done an amazing job at putting this art together. And I think people need to realize age, forget about it. Number of years doing this or that in the martial, forget about it. Look, if you're good at something, no one cares how old you are. No one cares how long you train. You can be 100 years old and train for 90 years and still suck at what you do. You got to look beyond that. Let's look at your ability, your knowledge, right? What are you sharing with other people? Is it valid? I think Kaji Kembo is definitely a valid martial art. I've been doing it almost 50 years. Next year will be 50 years for me. Kept me alive on the streets of Oakland all those years I was working as a police officer. Very valid martial art. Got striking, grappling, all the good stuff. So that's it, just to wrap that up.
Well, Mitch, thank you so much for coming out. And I would agree with you, but I don't want to take up more time about my experiences with Kaji Kembo because that'll be a totally other podcast. Thank you very much for listening to Social Jello with Angelo Podcast. One of these once a week. Sometimes I cover Kaji Kembo history. Sometimes I go off on controversial topics like gatekeeping martial arts. Stay tuned. Catch you next time.